Insight on Business, the News Hour with Michael Libby is made possible through the support of Aureon, Human Resources and More for businesses and nonprofits. AUREON.com. Remax Concepts, real estate professionals with offices in the Des Moines Metro, Nevada, and Cedar Rapids. RealEstateConcepts.net.
Earlier in the week, the Jewish Community Relations Commission, the JCRC, held another in their series of lectures designed to enrich the community when it comes to issues of diversity. Before we heard from the principal of Valley High School in West Des Moines, Iowa, I asked Dr. Mark Finkelstein of the JCRC why his group and the Greater Des Moines Jewish Federation does these events.
As representative of the Jewish community, the JCRC is reflecting the need of the community to help promote racial diversity and equality in American society.
And through an educational process, is that what you hope to do?
That's it. We've had several speakers, including David Maxwell today and Daniel Zeno, the policy counsel for ACLU, among others, to help bring some thought process to the general community who are interested in working through some of these complex issues.
Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And this is good work that you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
David Maxwell is the high school principal at Valley High School in West Des Moines. Here we talk about implicit bias and what lessons business might learn from the world of education. Here is that conversation. David, welcome to the Business News Hour.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
This is really a timely topic. I mean, we are seeing issues of bias not only in education, but in the workplace and in our society, where groups are pitted against one another for sometimes no good reason. I want you, if you can, to find what is implicit bias. And you gave a story today about a guy by the name of Matt Conley. And I think that really does point this out. Go ahead.
Well, implicit bias, it's always been a part of our country. It's always been a part of our history. And I think because of certain movements now, a lot of research, we're really now being able to identify where we see implicit bias. In education, that's where I really choose to focus, is where those achievement gaps, or call the opportunity privilege gaps, where we see achievement scores with our white and Asian students higher, sometimes double-digit percentage-wise, than our African-American and Latino kids. And knowing that race has nothing to do with intelligence. Instead, it's oftentimes the practices and policies of our districts and our schools, as well as some of the attitudes of some of the educators, which contributes to that gap.
And you were talking about a personal reflection. You're an African-American man. You go to a conference, and you hear someone start to speak, and your implicit bias immediately rose. Tell us that story.
You know, everybody experiences implicit bias. We're human beings. We are the sum of our experiences. And as a result of that, some of those experiences may be negative. And so that helps color how we maybe come into contact or how we deal with other people. At this conference, I remember we were sitting at a table. The educators from West Des Moines were sitting at a table next to some educators from South Carolina. And as soon as one of the men from South Carolina started speaking, he had a deep Southern accent. And as soon as I heard the deep Southern accent, and he had short cropped hair, and I immediately decided he didn't like me. He was racist. And it was just one of those first gut level immediate reactions. And it wasn't until after the conference that day that we struck up a conversation and we actually became friends. And it's just another reminder that even those of us who are working, trying to fight implicit bias, experience it ourselves. The key is being able to identify when that happens, because oftentimes that first thought becomes a second thought, becomes a third thought. And the next thing we know, we've created this false narrative about somebody or about a group of people that we just categorize everybody. They are like this, and they must be like this and act like this. And instead, we need to try to get to know each individual person as an individual human being and let them, let their actions, let their words, then we can start making decisions about how we want to be or how we want to react around these individuals. But it's so unfair to make snap judgments about people based on external factors.
And yet, we all do that. We all do that based on how what people are wearing, how they speak, what they look like. All of those things really do have a filter on them. And oftentimes, they're exacerbated by already set-in stereotypes and prejudice. If we're going to really handle implicit bias, it would appear to me that education might be the way that we get there, especially dealing with younger students and going through the entire grade level. Is this something that's being done in elementary schools as well with the teachers?
Well, I'll tell you, it depends on the district, I'll be honest. You know, it depends on what kind of implicit bias training or equity training teachers are experiencing, administrators are experiencing, because we know that all sectors of life are impacted or affected by implicit bias. And when it happens in schools, that to me is one of the most disastrous things which can happen, is because you're talking about a person's future. You're talking about a person's life. And if we're going to have teachers making snap judgments about kids based on the way they dress or walk into a room, and instead of trying to build a relationship with that student and get to know that student on a personal level, and instead of creating a false narrative about, oh, he or she must be like this, oh, their name is Juan, or their name is Shamika, or something along those lines, they must be like this, they must not be ready to learn, they must not have the same advantages, that is such a gross misunderstanding and assumption. And we have to, again, it starts with building relationships with our kids.
And this is not necessarily, because you said this in your talk today, this is not just black and white or white and Latino or Asian, but you also talked about trans kids that we have implicit bias about, or students that come from single-parent families that don't necessarily mirror the same upbringing or the same life as their educators do.
Right. Oftentimes a lot, and I don't want to make gross assumptions or these wide-sweeping generalizations.
Sure.
But, a lot of educators come from middle-class backgrounds, they come from backgrounds where again, middle class, some in Iowa, a lot of white families and teachers are white. And we know that the population, especially in some of the urban areas, don't necessarily reflect the staff. The school enrollment oftentimes is very diverse, but the staff population is not. And so, how are our teachers approaching instruction? Mm-hmm. Are they approaching instruction looking at their classes and at instruction through their own personal filter, that of growing up as a middle class Iowan with middle class values? Maybe some of those are white as well. And instead, trying to approach instruction through the filter of a black student or a transitioning student. Because, transitioning students, they simply don't feel comfortable in the bodies in which they were born, especially when it comes to gender. This is a very real experience for kids, for humans. And for us to assume that, because the student's name is Nicole, that she identifies as a girl. And instead of, how does the student want to be referred to? What kind of pronoun does the student want to be used with them, he or she, him or her? And so, we have to, there are so many different experiences with our kids. A class of 25 students, you're talking about 25 different learning styles, 25 different life experiences. And often some of those are not going to mirror that of the teachers and the instructors. So what we ask our teachers to do is have a culturally responsive classroom. try to approach instruction looking through the filter of your kids. And again, that only comes by knowing your kids, building those relationships.
David Maxwell is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking to him about his presentation earlier this week relative to implicit bias. I want to talk about something that's concrete. A lot of this is how we feel or how we react. But you did something at your school that I thought was very interesting. It was called an equity audit. What did that tell you? First of all, what is an equity audit, and what did that tell you?
An equity audit looks it looks both at qualitative and quantitative data. So we looked at all of our data around suspensions, around program identification. So, for instance, our extended learning program, like talented and gifted, special education, ELL identification, and we first of all start with looking at our building enrollment based on subgroup identification on race. So, how many white kids? What's the percentage? How many black kids? Latino, Asian, and then two or more races. Those are the five main ones that we do, because that's where you see the greatest numbers. And then we start looking at those programs and how are those kids, what's the breakdown of the populations of those kids? So, for instance, you know, there's a lot of disproportionality with our ELP data,
and that's,
versus
that's
the talented and gifted
talented
data
and gifted.
Versus our, say, reading resource data, which is intended to try to get kids reading back on grade level. And so what we did was this audit, it exposed where those gaps are, where those inequities are, where the gaps are. And so as leaders, once you have that hard data in front of you showing you exactly where we're missing the mark, then it becomes our responsibility to take appropriate action.
And final question for you, David. As we take a look at life going forward, you know, these are young people that you have in your charge for only a few hours each day and only a few months each year. And then you release them back into their own habitat, if you will. I would suspect that you're hoping that some of the things that you're teaching will transfer. Mm-hmm. And that's important, because it matters when people get jobs. We look at the data. Women are paid less than men. Mm-hmm. If you are a African-American, you're paid less than white women. If you happen to be a woman that's Latino, you get paid less. Is there lessons for business here as well as the educational system?
Absolutely. There's lessons for everyone. And I'll tell you, when you think about how do we interact with our guests when they come to our businesses, or how do we approach people who are applying for jobs, being able to recognize that bias, being able to realize, you know, if I see a name which might be ethnically diverse or demonstrate that this person might come from a different ethnicity than say somebody with a more American name, like a John Smith, or, you know, something
sure.
along those lines. You know, are we immediately rejecting that application, or are we going to call that person in for an interview? That's one question. Another question is, and this happens all the time, and I hear it all the time from our kids, profiling when they come into the places of business, being followed. You know, I'll tell you, can I give one quick example?
Of course you can, sure.
You know, and a few years ago, we were in Colorado, and I'll never forget, we were in Breckenridge. We went to this candy store, and the candy was along all the walls of the business. And so because it had the candy along all sides of the business, a circular counter. And so I walked in with my kids, and we're standing along one of the walls looking at all the candy, and they had a bunch of candy. And I remember I turned around, and the clerk was standing right there behind us. And I thought, oh, didn't pay it any mind. So then we moved a little few more feet to the right, and we're looking more at some more candy. And I happened to look back, and the clerk was right behind us again. And at that moment, I thought, okay, because I had a feeling I knew what was going on. Let's try this again. So we moved a little bit more. We moved down to the other end of the store to where there's more candy. And I said, all right, if I turn around and he's there, it's happening. I turned around, and there he was, just following us, just tracking us as we were in the store. And here's the thing. I doubt he even thought he knew what he was doing. I think it was just automatic. I think he may have seen a person of color and just thought, you know, I'm gonna watch him. And there were other people in the store. But this happens all the time. We hear about it in the news. We hear about how sometimes, you know, African Americans are treated. You know, a young man out in Old Navy and here in West Des Moines was accused of stealing a coat that he had purchased. Some gentlemen out in Starbucks out in Pennsylvania were arrested because they were waiting for somebody and they hadn't purchased anything. They had a business meeting to meet there and they were escorted from the store. It happens all the time. And again, just being cognizant of what am I thinking about this person based on their name or their look or their appearance? What am I thinking? And being able to identify those thoughts and stop that first thought from going to that second thought, to that third thought, to that building that false narrative.
Something that I think we all need more lessons on as we deal with everything around us today. David Maxwell, thank you so very much for spending time with us.
Michael Libby, you're a good man. Thank you, sir.
Once again, that was the principal of Valley High School in West Des Moines, Iowa. His name, David Maxwell. Talking about implicit bias, how they've tackled that or trying to tackle it in education, and perhaps business could learn a lesson or two from this as well. Good stuff. All right, we've got to clear on out of here. It's nigh on to the top of the hour. Have yourself a wonderful day. For all of us associated with Insight on Business, the News Hour, Chap Ramsey is our production coordinator. Sales and marketing falls to Aaron Libby. The voice of the Business News Hour is Hunter Pease. And the music you're listening to right now is arranged, composed, and conducted exclusively for the Business News Hour by our friend James Goodlett of Jam Good Productions. You need some original music for your project? We can hook you up. All right, for all those folks, my name is Michael Libby. Have yourself a wonderful evening. Be safe, be well, be careful. Most of all, be good to your fellow man. Good day.